Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. I hope you all are enjoying the lovely weather that we have here on the East Coast, and that the beginning of summer is doing well for you. I want to do a little housekeeping before we start our program this evening, and then I'd like to introduce you to my wonderfully, genuinely innovative and gracious guest that has consented to be on the program this evening. First, you are listening to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser on blogtalkradio.com/ S is in Sam, F is in Fred, T is in Tom, H is in Harry, and the number 2. I see that people are already calling in and on the board. If those of you who are listening want to call on during this broadcast, you can dial in to 516-453-6063. And if at any time you have a question or a comment that you'd like to make, if you want to say hello to myself or the guest, then press the number 1. We have been doing this now for almost 70 episodes. And I have to tell you, every single time I'm overwhelmed by the fact that sometimes I know the guest before the interview begins, and then sometimes I don't know, it's the first time I've talked to them. And I learned so many wonderful, wonderful things about the people who are here, who have selflessly dedicated themselves on the sustaining of the arts. I love the people in my business. I love my performers. I love those people who have given up their lives and the discipline to perform. But some of these people are not performers. They are people who the arts has entered their lives very early on, and then they've decided to go on another path, but selflessly had decided to enter into a whole relationship with the arts that helps it sustain itself. And that is my introduction to my guest this evening. I met this wonderful woman at an event that we both were at the symphony, Ford Symphony Hall here in Allentown. And she was just the most delightful table partner you'd ever want to know. But I really didn't know anything about her until we started talking and she started inviting me to the events that she was heading up and helm. Her name is Heather Rodale. And it is a name, if you are in the Lehigh Valley, that is a name that you see on several different kinds of buildings or properties. I've had the privilege of performing in a jazz room that is named after her family. She is selflessly one of the sweetest people that I know, and we're going to build the arc as to how she got to here, but let me tell you what she has done a little bit of it, and of course, she will then fill it in for me as we talk. Heather has served on as Vice President of the Community Outreach in the fields of arts, education, and wellness. She served on the company's Board of Directors for Rodale, Inc., and that's her family's publishing company. And those of us who are familiar with the wonderful magazine, Prevention Magazine, her family published it until 2018. So we have that connection in that she grew up in a family that was always very interested in the wellness of our society. But it's also her involvement in education that fascinates me. These are some of the things that I did not know about her. She has a master's in elementary education and a bachelor's in journalism, both at Lehigh University, a university that I hold dear to my heart because I've been doing some work with them, and they're so very wonderful. An associate degree in elementary education from Harcum College, and she has been awarded an honorary doctorate of humane letters in 2000. One of the things that she also is at the helm of, and this is why I waited a little bit later, there are two things that I am so proud of her as she navigates the helm of. One, she created the Hope and Healing Juried Art Show for high school and college students. I've had the privilege of attending some of these events, and it is so wonderful to see these young people and how their artwork is being appreciated by those people who have an opinion in the art world. And she has founded the non-for-profit organization Healing Through the Arts, and that is at htta.org. She founded it in 2008, and she's going to tell us the journey about that, why that was so important for her, because it is more her story to tell than my trying to replicate it. So with all of those things and much, much more, I would like to introduce you, my audience, Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser, to Miss Heather Rodale. Heather Rodale, would you say hello to my audience, please?
Oh, hello, and thank you, Lenny, for having me on. It's been a pleasure to look forward to this event tonight.
Well, it's my pleasure to have you on. It has been, you know, something that we talked about, and sometimes you say things and it never really materializes, but we've worked in order to try to make this work. Now, I want people to understand a little bit about all of the things that you do, because we would need 2 hours to talk about all of the other things that you're doing. And you have a project now that you're working on, and I do want to talk about how you want to advance that project. But first, I want to talk about your project, the Hope and Healing Juried Arts Show, before I even get to Healing Through the Arts. Talk to me about how that came about, if you could.
So we're heading into our 13th year for this art show, and the students, any student in high school and college, can create a piece of art in two different sizes. Our website has the instructions, and then they donate their original artwork to us. We put it in a gallery, and anybody who works in the field of healing can request specific pieces for their hospital, their doctor's office, their counselor's office, their school, any place where healing takes place. And so the students donate the art to us for free, and we pass it along for free to those facilities that request specific pieces. Now, after 12 years, we have art in more than 30 hospitals and healing facilities. And the students also supply an inspiration statement with their art, which helps the viewer connect to what the artist wanted to say.
Tell me how this idea materialized, Heather.
So this came about in 2004. I was diagnosed with an intermediate stage of melanoma, and I was in the hospital, not in my hometown. So it's very lonely to go for your surgery far from your home. And when I was in the hospital, I had a window that looked out to nature. And I spent a lot of time seeing the sights and watching the sun rise and set out of my window. As I walked through the hospital, because they make you walk on your floor so you don't get pneumonia, I noticed that not everybody on my floor had a window that looked out to nature. So when I came home, I thought, what can I do to help people who are trying to heal and don't have that nature view. And as I did research, I found that Dr. Roger Ulrich did research in a Philadelphia hospital where patients who had a hospital room that looked out to nature, as opposed to ones that had a room that looked out to a brick wall, the ones that had a nature view went home from the hospital at least one day sooner than the others. They needed less pain medication. They were more hopeful about their future. And there were many benefits to that. And I realized for myself, too, that nature was a very powerful component to healing. So I created this art show because I thought, well, if you don't have a window that looks out to nature, a picture of nature or a beautiful painting would be a window of hope when a real window didn't exist. So that's how we came across creating the Hope and Healing Juried Art Show, based on my own trying to heal from cancer.
That's amazing. That's now I'm going to go one more step to one more project before I take you back to the journey when you were a little girl and all through that got you here. Usually I do that first, but I'm just so very proud of the programs that you have created about how important and essential the arts are in a healing process. You have this nonprofit organization called Healing Through the Arts, and you started that in 2008. Tell me, now that was started a little bit before started the Juried Art Show. So tell me, how does that work, and how do they work together if they work together?
Yes, they do work together. So after I had cancer, I suffered a depression, a significant depression. I didn't know how to heal. I had kind of the perfect storm in life. I had cancer, an empty nest, and a divorce all about the same time. And I took a sabbatical from my job. I had a life coach who was helping me kind of find my way. And she said, just, you know, try to find things that bring you joy. So I took classes, I traveled, I went to concerts, and a lot of these things I did by myself. And I found that everything that helped me heal was based in the arts. And then I thought, what would somebody do who was not able to take a sabbatical from their job? How would they find these things, these jewels that I found that helped me heal? So I created my website in the beginning to share this information with people. And I had at that time the 8 expressive arts of healing, which I felt were important components to help me get on my feet again. And so the not-for-profit and the website were created first, and then the Hope and Healing Juried Art Show was the next step.
All right. So now that we've seen that, those are very important programs that you are at the helm of. I want to take you all the way back, because I know a couple of people who you went to school with and all this other thing. They talk about you. Let me go back to the young Heather. Was young Heather, say in elementary school, ever interested in performance, in an instrument, in visual arts? Tell me about yourself then. Describe yourself to me when you were in elementary school.
So my mom was an art teacher. And I was the oldest of 5 kids. We lived on a farm. And when there was a snow day or, you know, too many rainy days in a row, my mom would get out these art and craft projects for us to do. So art was always something that was present in our lives. Every generation of my family, and specifically the women, both my grandmothers, my mother, my sisters, now my brother too, are all artists. And so we're surrounded by the influences of art. My one brother was a musician as well, so we had music in our home as well. And it was just, art was just part of our life.
When you were younger, kind of child do you think you were? I mean, now you're looking back at yourself and you've got the advantage of maturity, because when I ask you now, you've got the articulation of an adult. But what kind of child were you with all of this artwork around? What were you doing? Now, you talked about one of your brothers is an artist. Another brother was a musician. And all the dominance of the women in your family. What were you doing, Heather?
Oh, I was not a good reader. So I chose to do things with my hands instead of picking up a book. And being on a farm, you know, and my grandparents lived on the farm too. So we were free to roam during the day when we weren't in school, to our grandparents' home, and my grandmother was cooking, and my grandfather was a playwright, among every other things, and listened to great music, and so I would say my childhood was very nature oriented because we were outside a lot. It was hands on.
Oh, it sounds like it. It sounds like you had a lot of freedom to create. And
yeah,
that was one of the things that I think when one has the safety of creation around them, your imagination is allowed to run wild. And you just decided that you could just do about just about everything because it was open to you. Does that sound like it? Were you
correct? Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. When you were in school, what did the teachers think about you, per se?
We always were part of this bigger family. I would say that the hard part of being a Rodale and growing up was that the good thing was that we ate healthy food. We didn't eat sugar. We were organic farmers. But that was not the norm at the time. And some of the kids in school thought we were crazy, and, you know, because we didn't eat processed foods, we didn't drink soda. And so that was a little bit challenging. When I went to college at Harcum, I thought, oh, I'm finally going to get away from and be my own person. Not people aren't going to know anything about my family. And that was in 1970. And the Life magazine had a front cover about health foods and organic farming. And all of a sudden, people at my college started saying, can somebody come and talk to us about this? So that sort of turned the corner to the good side of being a Rodale. I mean, we always felt like we were doing the right thing. And my grandfather said, you know, regardless of what names people call you or, you know, what they think of you, we are doing the right thing, and someday they will see that we are right. And so, you know, it was a hard time in respect to people not approving of, you know, or thought we were a little bit nuts, but then it sort of turned the corner.
Yeah. By the time you got to college, everybody caught up with you and your family. That's what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, it's when you are unique. You know, I the word different is interesting. It's been applied to me, but I like the word unique more.
Yes.
It's applicable to myself and to those people who are not the norm, a little bit different from the norm. It It is difficult. Most people don't think that it's a difficult road, because they kind of think everything is given to you and everything is easy. But they're difficult things all the way around. So now you've got this I think incentive to be, as they say, you do you. You did you. Your family was not reliant upon what people thought of them. What they would determine to be exactly who they wanted to be. And that's how you started your life stream. So you're on this journey, and I want to know, those things that we do, we get married, we have children and all those things. What comes out of that, what transition have you made so that you are who you are right now?
I think looking at what brings me joy and building a life around that, and constantly reassessing, is this still working for me? Because you know, we don't have, when we had the publishing company, we were working in the company, and then you know, we sold the company, and it had been our identity. And I was really lucky to have Healing Through the Arts at the same time, because when I was no longer working in human resources at Rodale, I could dedicate and jump into full-time Healing Through the Arts.
I think that, so in that whole transition kind of time, when, what would you describe was the easiest thing for you and the hardest thing for you?
You mean about selling the company or about
changing
career-wise?
The making the transition from, you know, when you have the legacy of a company like that, the selling of it, you have a position, and you said that you were lucky enough to have Healing Through the Arts and Hope and Healing and all of those things. But what was there, that was an easier transition for you. What was there any difficulty finding your place now? Finding your place now, the transition that where you are now.
Well, I think when even when you have a clear path where you want to go, there are things that pop up that cause you to reevaluate. You know, whether it's the economy or location changes, things like people in your life. Change. And, I think you can't get too set in your ways. You always, and I work with a lot of young people who are far more talented in certain areas than me, especially technology. And, you know, I think that's a wonderful opportunity. I try and always surround myself with people who know more than me and are younger than me, because that shows me where I need to go to, connect with people.
So flexibility is a very important thing for you. What do you categorize as success?
Happiness. Having companionship of, people that you love around you, being secure enough that, and not, having the resources that you need to do what you need to do, and not being extravagant in any way. Because, one of the things that's important to me is the environment, and, I want to make sure. In fact, I have a daughter who lives in Portland, Oregon, and she thinks about how she's going to recycle something before she buys it. And I keep trying to think of that, too.
That's interesting. So, all right. Then how does education, what kind of position in your life? What does that education component mean for you in your life? You've got so many degrees in it. What interested you in education, and how do you segue that into this project that you want to do this summer in Allentown?
So I was the oldest of five kids, and during the time that, you know, I was probably early teens, my mom mm-hmm. was not healthy, and I needed to help take care of the other kids. And I really enjoyed that. And there was a time in college where we had an employee in the company whose wife was dying of cancer, and they had four little kids. And I said to my dad, what I want to do this summer is take care of those little kids. And, you know, it was very rewarding for me to do that. And I learned a lot. And, you know, I just thought, yeah, I want to be a teacher. And I've taught every demographic, every age level. Before I started the Hope and Healing Juried Art Show, I had not worked with high school kids. And other people told me that they would not understand the importance of creating art to help somebody else because they were too me-centered. Well, that created a challenge for me, and I said, I'm going to tackle that. And what I found was, a lot of high school kids are trying to figure out where they want to go in life. And if you can open the door to help them, it's very rewarding. And kids today tell me, high school kids today tell me, I want to be an artist, but my parents tell me I'll never make money at it. So I always tell them, do your first and your second choice and try and combine them. And you will have more success. And I think having experience in the arts field helps you think more creatively, and every single business career path needs creative thinkers.
I think you're absolutely right. I think when one involves themselves in the art, it opens up your range of understanding different levels of life, different tiers of life, different cultures, economically, how people sustain themselves, what it may not be on your level, but you do understand that there's more than one level. And you have an empathy, I believe, to people that way. What goal do you have as far as what you'd like education to do, combining it with the arts? Because you do exactly what I'm talking about. You've combined the love of education and the love of the arts together, and you've made them palatable for young people without making them feel like, oh, if you get into the arts, you'll never have anything. You never, you know, you'll never amount to anything. You'll always be that struggling artist kind of thing. Where do you want that to go? Do you have a program, a plan? How do you see the arts and education in 5 years?
Well, when I started the Hope and Healing Art Show, it was a time when high schools were cutting their funds for the arts, and I wanted to award the students who were really excelling in our art show. And we give five judges prizes between $100 and $500 each to these students who, and it's different judges every year. So, you know, you can't say, oh, this kind of art won last year. You know, it's new every year. And we wanted to give honor to kids who were good at the arts and with these awards. And I don't want to focus entirely on the awards, because just competing in this art show is an honor in itself, and it inspires so many people who come to the gallery and see what these kids are creating. Now, when we started, we were told about 20 to 30% of high school kids were dealing with mental health issues, either themselves or within their families. Now it's almost 70%. So this is really showing us that the arts are incredibly important, and it's giving a voice to some of these kids, especially in the inspiration statements that they supply. Because when you look at the piece of art, you can't really tell that someone is suffering. They're creating beautiful pieces and enjoying the process of creating. But their inspiration statement opens up a door where you can actually see if they share things. And one teacher told me she had no idea before she did this project that her students were both suffering and healing at the same time. So she said, I'm always going to be part of your project. And some high schools have included this project into their curriculum. The students don't have to donate the art, but they do create art as part of their curriculum for hope and healing. And then some kids get very attached to their pieces and can't give it up. And that's okay too.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think what's happening is that we both experience in this area, there is it was a movement in that the arts were not extended in the school system, and all of us were trying to find ways of finding ways of exposing the arts to young people the way that we had that exposure, and how and it helps in their development. I think that's one of the things that really worries me all the time. I was so very, very fortunate in that I was always raised in a very creative space and always felt that I could do everything with no parameters whatsoever. I find that that is not the case and with a lot of people who are in my age group and a lot of the young people now. So thinking about that and thinking about the inclusion of art and how the arts are I don't want to say an escapism, but it is a way for young people to express themselves. How would you like our education system here in 5 years to be able to open up for our children? Because we know that it's uneven, our education system here in Lehigh Valley.
Yes.
So how would you like that? How do you think it can even up? That's always been a challenge for me. I've created choruses and everything like that, but how do we help these children more than anything else?
Well, this summer I had the opportunity to teach art at a homeless shelter and at another facility that has several at-risk kids. These kids are between 7 and 15, and mm-hmm. in one of these situations, three times as many kids signed up as they had expected. So Monday, I'm going to be starting. I have created a four-part curriculum on mandalas for peace and calm. And so I have an hour on Monday with two different classes, and then another one on Tuesday, where I hope to give these kids an opportunity to have fun creating, and also to learn some skills about using different art tools. Like I wanted to get as professional tools as I could for these kids, because I wanted them to have things to draw and to create that weren't what they normally have. So the colored pencils are quality colored pencils. There's, you know, gel pens. And I'm going to teach them not just coloring. The first class is about coloring, but it's about shading and it's about layering. And then the second class is a mandala collage. And the third class is actually a little bit of geometry where they're going to create, they're going to draw their own mandalas. And then the fourth class is actually a picnic with some inspirational cards. So it's not really mandala related on the fourth class, but these kids are coming to my Healing Arts Center, which they're calling it a sanctuary, and I want the kids just to enjoy nature and a little bit of art connection to it.
I think also what you're doing is, you know, the arts, we have to be very careful in the arts, those of us who have been in it for a long time, and to not make it an elitist kind of thing where only certain people are allowed to enjoy it or to think that they can be a part of it. And I think what is happening with what you're creating is that the you're creating an environment where anybody from anywhere can enjoy what sometimes has been a little bit less enjoyed by some people on an economic strata. So I congratulate you on that. And now I'm going to say this because I've told you already. We only have about 20 minutes left, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going. I want you to think about this. What question would you like me to ask you that I haven't asked that tells me more about you? Now, Heather Rodale.
Whoa, that's a hard question. Oh.
Should
I just answer
this question? Well, no, just answer. Tell me about, you know, what haven't I asked you about? What haven't I, that you want to talk about that I haven't asked about you? Because this is my way of, you know, I've got a lot of things, a lot of your accomplishments. I've talked about your childhood. I've talked about your education and your own personal life. But there are some things that, you know, sometimes when we are talking in conversation, some things that you like to talk about that I haven't touched yet. So tell me.
Oh, let's see. I don't know if I want to, let's see. My life has not been always easy. And, you know, what the question is, what do you do when your life, when you suffer challenges or setbacks?
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody has setbacks, everybody has challenges, everybody has to kind of reevaluate where they're going. And I've been lost. I've been lost at times. And so is that a question?
No, it's a revelation for me that I share. I think it's a wonderful door that you've opened up because I think that sometimes people think that when they perceive you, that everything in your life that they can see goes very, very well for you. And they never think about those moments where those very private moments where it's not going as well, you know, and it's not, all of us are not in that personality where we go out and we talk about every single thing, every movement that happens in our lives, everything that we eat for breakfast and how we, you know, do all of those things. But that there are moments where we all are searching. And in searching, it gives the impression that that we are lost at a certain time and that everyone is not on the track of life all the time, that one of the gifts of life is that we realize that we need to search as to who we are and that that's a gift. It's not a negative. It's a growth. And so
right.
For me, what you're saying to me is that you know, what one of the things that that has occurred to you is the growth of being able to know that you were on a path and you needed to have more particular details about that path. And I say, welcome to my world. You know, because I think that the impression is that everyone, you know, that everything is going well all the time. My mother used to say, anyone who smiles all the time, be weary of them. Be weary of them. There's, you know, they're hiding some kind of fear or something. Don't be afraid of them, but always really, when you ask how they are, really want to know how that person is and take time to listen. And I think that that's what we're talking about, is that we are people who at some point in time, we don't smile all the time. And we hopefully will have people in our lives that have taken time to listen and have helped us find the path that we should be on. So,
and to not lose hope. Not to lose hope.
It's, you know, hope is eternal, I think. Hope is here until we're not here anymore. You know, I'm so very, very moved by what you've dedicated your life to do. And I don't even realize, I don't think listening to you, you don't realize what that legacy and that footprint is that you've created. And that was one of my, you know, questions to ask you. You know, do you realize the footprint that you've created here? And if you do, what do you think it is? And if you don't, have you ever thought about the footprint that you're creating?
When you have had a serious health condition, you do think about, you know, the legacy that you're leaving. Or, you know, when I had cancer, I was a single mom. And I started art journaling to leave messages for my kids. I had four kids. And I felt like they knew me as a mom, but they did not know me as a person. And I wanted to let them know who I was as a person. And through my art journals, I hopefully have done that, as well as provide them with hope and inspiration when they face challenges, because their path is not going to be easy either.
Well, you know, life can be simple, but it doesn't have to be easy. It's not necessarily easy. My father used to say, life is simple. This is not easy.
Yeah.
And if you know the difference is what he was talking about, you know, the simplicity of it is just being who you are and accepting people for who they are. But sometimes there's difficulties in that. And also maintaining your own principles are very, very, you know, when you talk about your grandfather and what he taught you was, my father used to say, when you're driving a car, you drive your own gate. You drive how fast you're going to go. You don't let anybody else determine that for you. So I believe that that's what your grandfather was saying. No one can determine who you are. You present yourself as you are, and it's up to them to accept it or not, but you're not going to change one way or the other. And that's a great life lesson. That's a strength that your grandfather planted in you. And a lot of people don't have that strength. You see that every time they're in the company of somebody else, they're like chameleons. They change, you know, they change, you know, what's going on with this group, that's what I'm going to do. What's going on with that group, that's what I'm going to do. Where I would say, well, that's not what I believe in. And we should agree to disagree. And that's a very difficult thing for a lot of people to accept. You know, immediately accepted, to not be in the clique, to not need, you know, there are people who need all of those things, and I have no judgment for them. You know, I know that they're there, and and they have to be who they are, and I have to be who I am. So I say that what was very important for me is to connect, I think, the things that you learned in childhood to who you are now. And, you know, and that's a direct connection for me, what you were taught about maintaining the standards that your family created. And even though it wasn't popular, that you were not going to be moved from that decision because you had pride in yourself. And then you apply it now to these organizations and all of the goals that you have, you know, you have. What do you want the things that you're doing now in 5 years, how do you want that to evolve? Do you want it to be doing the same thing that you're doing now? Do you want, how do you see yourself in 5 years or the work that you've started now? How would you like to see it?
Well, I always want to be open to change course and fine-tune the things that I'm doing. So I don't think I'm going to be doing the exact same thing in 5 years that I'm doing now, because the time will be different in 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I do hope that people will think more about the arts and healthcare and how important it is to the mental health of people today. I'm upset by the fact that there's more mental health crises than there was 10 years ago. You hope that it's not going to keep going at the same rate and that we will be able to help people. And really, just providing an option of hope is what I am planning on doing. And I just want to be open to what presents itself to me. This summer project, I think, is only like 3 months ago I had this opportunity. So, you know, you asked me 3 months ago what I was going to be doing this summer. I said, I was going to take the summer off and just have fun and go to the beach.
Yeah.
You know, now I'll have to think about doing that in August or, you know, a little bit here and there. But there are these opportunities that come up that you don't want to pass them up, even though they're really a lot of work and they are last minute type things. They're very rewarding. And I'm hoping, I always learn as much from the students as I think they learn from me. So the opportunity I have to work with more and different kinds of people is all part of my education as well.
Well, I have to say that I'm very, very proud. I was proud to know you when we first sat down to that table, and you and Carl and my Carl were so very, very personable, because I think by that time I had already performed in a room that had your last name in it, but I didn't know who you were at that time. That was the funniest thing. It was not until the end of the evening that you told me what your last name was. I was like, oh, okay.
That was a great night.
That great. It was a lot of fun. And it always feels good to do something that, if you can, to do something for somebody else that they're going to benefit from. And that night was a great benefit night, where I think that the organization that benefited was the symphony and all the avenues of trying to introduce the arts then to different people in different tiers all over the place. And that's just one of the things that I think is very important. Now, I just want to stop right now. Now, we only have a few minutes, and we have a board that has many people on it. I want to know if giving in the last 40 minutes that we've been on the air, if you have any questions, if you have any opinions or statements about what we've been talking about, the arts, because this particular program, I think, encompasses for me mostly of what I've been talking about how healing the arts are for the in the medical profession, how important it is for education, how it really does sustain itself in so many parts of our lives, and we yet in this society do not support it as much as we really should. Because if you look around in your home and you take everything in the room that you're sitting in, and you take everything that's related to a piece of artistry, whether it's visual arts, whether it's crafting, sculpturing, music that you listen to, if you take all of that down, you barely have anything left in your room. And how important it is in our lives that this happens. So I can't thank you for bringing all of this up. And I'm hoping, I don't see anyone. I think everyone is just listening to your story here. And so as we wind down, is there anything that you want to say to people about what you, how you'd like them to think about the arts in education, in medicine? What you'd like them to think about and take away from this program tonight?
I would really love everybody to find an avenue of some kind of art that they enjoy and learn more about it. And you don't have to be an artist to enjoy. You can be a viewer by going to a gallery, or, you know, even when I teach people, when they're in my classes, they're not artists that are coming to my classes. They're people who just want to find out how to connect the art and what the activity that we're doing to their own life. And when I'm creating my art journal or some other piece of art, I lose a sense of time. I feel no pain. I'm listening to beautiful music, which is inspiring me even more. And I just want to share that with others. And you know, I don't want people to think that just because they're not good at it, it is not going to be a benefit in their life. It will be a benefit in their life. They just need to find out how.
Yes, I think that applies to all of the arts, you know, whether it's visual, whether it's the music. You know, you don't have to be a concert pianist to be able to really enjoy the opera or someone who is playing an instrument. It what it does for you, it just enhances the life so much. And then I keep on saying this, and I say it again and again, and I'll say this, we have a couple more minutes left and that's all, but is that it's up to us to make sure that we create the avenues so that our children and children's children, our grandchildren that are in our families, enjoy the different kinds of arts that exist, so that we cannot let it die, and we cannot let it also become so elite that only a small group of people can enjoy it. It is here on this earth for everyone to enjoy. And I again can't thank you enough for coming in and explaining your desire to share the visual healing that arts can do through visual arts. I can't thank you enough, because I don't think people think about it, Heather. I really don't.
There's a lot of emphasis on mindfulness now. The arts, you know, when you're doing it, can be a meditation for those like me who can't meditate in the traditional way. Art for me is a meditation.
Mm-hmm. You've had wonderful musicians, though, create pieces for you and give them to you so that they can – are they played in hospitals? Explain that to me a little bit, because I remember –
We have these meditations which combine the music of Jim Brickman, or Olivia Newton-John gave us the rights to three of her songs, and Kira Willie to one of hers. Mostly it's Jim Brickman. And we combine the students' art with a slideshow, and it's all on our website at htta.org. You can view these short meditations, like 3 to 4 minutes. They're beautiful. You can do them anytime, anywhere, on your phone, And it's just an additional part of art as healing.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. I mean, again, everyone, we are going to be doing the after show afterthoughts, and you'll be able to see Heather once we archive it on Facebook and on YouTube. But also try to go to the website and try to enjoy that, because it doesn't take long. It's not a lot of our day, but if we then just exercise that and begin to appreciate, you know, some of that sometimes. Not, you know, I always tell people, don't get to the point where you have to force yourself, and don't raise the bar so high that I have to have 20 minutes of meditation now. No, meditate for a minute and a half, you know, and then increase it if you can, but don't start so high so that it's so unbelievably, you know, that it's not attainable for you to repeat it. And I think that's the enjoy, to be able to look forward to it, you know, at any point in time. But now that our time is coming to an end, my friend, I don't know that I think that we could probably talk a whole lot more about the arts and contributions and things that you want to do, but that's for another time, because then I have to have you go back. And you'll talk about how this summer went and what your expectations were and what actually happened, and were all your goals met? And I'd really like to follow up on that and find out, you know, or maybe you'll come in on our town meeting that we have and tell us about how it's doing. But I think it's very important that we just follow up on these things that people are doing in the arts to enhance people to their involvement of it. So I can't thank you enough for coming in and being with us. This last minute and a half, I've got to be able to say goodbye to my audience until July the 13th. But we're going to be on the after show, Afterthoughts, on Zoom tonight, and then they'll be able to see it. We'll put it up immediately on Facebook and on YouTube. So, again, thank you, Heather Rodale. Thank you for all that you do. Thank your grandfather for really giving you that thought of maintaining who you are, no matter what anybody thought about you. And I'm very glad that he did, because that way, when I met you, you were exactly who he wanted you to be. See there?
Oh, thank you, Lenny.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I want to thank everyone for listening to us this evening in Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. This has been a wonderful evening of us talking about how important the arts are in education as well as in medicine and healing. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in the after show Afterthoughts. And then I will see you all again in July 13th, Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And we'll have a wonderful guest. Deborah Herbert is a wonderful stylist. She's in Brooklyn. She does the hair. She does oil. She does all those things, and talk about her evolution where she is now. Hopefully she'll make it that day. If not, we'll have some more other guests. So we'll talk to you soon. Everyone have a lovely break, and I'll see you on July 13th, 2022.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night.
way no one can meet you the way.